Today's program is brought to you by TechServe. For more information, visit techserve.com.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's Sunday. That means it's the main course. My name is Patrick Martins. I just am in from the Far Rockaways to come do the show. Very exciting. I took the A train to the L train. Took about 4 hours. Anyway, this is going to be a fantastic show. First of all, we're sponsored by TechServe, which is, you know, New York City's original Macintosh, you know, be all and end all. We have Pat LaFrieda Jr. from Pat LaFrieda Meats On. That's very exciting. This guy is a real important guy in food and in the restaurant industry in New York City culture. Everyone's heard about his burgers and stuff, so he's going to be on with us. That's exciting. But before we get to the actual show, there's some crazy stuff happening at HRN, isn't there, Joe?
That's right.
So that's Joe Galarraga, the producer of the main course. So Aaron's doing some show, some three-part series on natural fibers.
Right. It's about collecting, or I guess the term is harvesting, shearing sheep, goats, long-hair rabbits, angora rabbits, llamas, all this sort of stuff, learning about natural dyes as opposed to dyes that are made with all sorts of chemicals that are bad for your skin and stuff like that. So she's been talking to lots of sheep farmers and stuff like that in Columbia County, all over the country. It's pretty interesting, pretty cool stuff.
Well, they could also do a thing on leather on the other side, right? Do you use all the hides of all the animals?
That's true. That's an angle that I feel like I've not heard anything about on the station for a while.
Well, Lillian and Miles Kahn, who are married to, their daughter married Mario Batali, they become very, successful in business through their dairy farm, becoming a coach farm. You know, or not Coach Farm. That's the name of it, Coach Farm, but it became Coach Bags. They used all the leather and aged it, and everyone has heard of Coach Handbags, so yeah. That obviously took off. But interesting. Well, you know, everyone knows, or people are going to learn, that Aaron Fairbanks is the executive director of the newly nonprofit 501c3 status nonprofit Heritage Radio Network. So very, very exciting, and she's going to write her first letter to everybody on the monthly email next week. So she's got big plans, bigger than I ever dreamed. So pretty, pretty exciting. And, Jack is moving, huh? Did you hear that?
Yeah, I think that he's probably loading up a truck right now as we speak. So
he's moving up in life thanks to Heritage Radio Network.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, it's very, very exciting to have Pat on. So we'll cut to break and come back with Pat LaFrieda Jr. of Pat LaFrieda Meats.
Before the night is through, I will walk to you. You will be the one, and I will be the drum. Before the night is through, I will walk to you. You will be the one, and I will be the drum. Just innocent as a smile my way. No idea I'd be in hell in the day. Moves that say so much without a word.
Man.
man. I need a new computer. I guess I'm going to have to go to the Apple Store.
What? Don't go to the Apple Store. Go to TechServe.
What's TechServe? I thought Apple Store was the only choice.
No, you're crazy. TechServe is so much better than the Apple Store. They're New York's original and still the best Apple computer, iPod, and iPhone store and repair shop. Plus, the store is really cool. You gotta go check it out. They're located at 119 West 23rd Street.
Well, that settles it. I'm headed to TechServe.
TechServe is a proud sponsor of HeritageRadioNetwork.org. For more information, visit TechServe.com. That's TechServe.com.
Pat, there you are. How's it going?
Great. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Well, thanks so much for calling in on the Sunday, or letting us call in on a Sunday. I know how busy you are. You know, as many people know, Pat LaFrieda is Patrick LaFrieda Jr. and Sr. and the LaFrieda family are basically New York City institutions. We're going to talk about their connection to New York City and this region through their meat distribution plant. And they've obviously been a very important company to Heritage Foods USA, which is my company, and this radio network, helping run this network basically indirectly. So we're really honored to have you on. And Pat, I thought I would start off. Well, just tell us about the history of Pat LaFrieda Meats.
Well, my great-grandfather started the trade in Italy in the late 1800s, came over here in 1909 with his children. Some of his children were born, some of the five, and one of the last to be born was my grandfather. He was the fifth child. And in 1922, the oldest brother, Anthony, and the youngest brother, Patrick, my grandfather, started the company. And we've been selling New York City restaurants and hotels in basically all five boroughs since then. Company was turned over to my father, and then I later joined up with my dad. So I'm the third generation running our company.
Very, very interesting. Long tenure here in the city. What was the meat packing district like back in 1922? Was it dangerous like we all see and or think about and see in movies, or what was it really like back then?
It was a very, very congested. It's like watching Gangs of New York, the Five Points. That's what the meat packing district was like. It was just filled with people, and it was a major distribution point for all meat going into New York City. So if the meat would come in on the train, which is now the High Line, it would then get brought down. Not even packaged, it would get broken down and then sent to different distributors who would then distribute it to restaurants. So even as a child, Patrick, I remember in the 80s going down with my dad, it was a 3 or 4 hour ordeal just to drive through it because of all the tractor trailers and cars and trucks trying to load meat and to distribute it throughout the city. Obviously, with the real estate the way it is and how expensive real estate is, it was only a matter of time before condos and posh hotels and restaurants took over that area. But and there's really no room in New York for distribution anymore, but that's the way it was back then.
It's interesting, the city is always evolving. Well, tell us about back to what we were talking about earlier with the first question. Tell us about the importance of family to the LaFrieda clan. I mean, it's a generational family-owned business, so that must put a pressure or an interesting perspective on family that maybe other people that don't have family businesses don't experience. So just talk about the, you know, kind of importance to family for you guys, past and present.
Well, even starting back, you know, going back to when I started with my dad, it was more about the business being our lifeline and our culture rather than it being something for profit. So if the company failed, the family failed, and our entire lives as growing up, we were all always instilled with how important our family was. So making sure that the family business succeeded was what always drove me into keeping us at the top of our game and working harder and harder. I mean, nepotism is good and bad. It's very difficult to work with family. And Patrick, you experience it when you come visit us firsthand, how challenging it could be. At the same time, those are the people that you are going to bleed for. And those are the people that you can trust. At the end of the day, those are the ones that you're going to trust. They always have your back. So it works both ways. It's frustrating in that, you know, there's a lot of Chiefs around.
Yes, a lot of LaFritas.
Sometimes you clash. And that's what's so great about us is that now that we're 24 hours a day, 6 days a week, we each take a different part of that shift, but we overlap a few hours just so we don't drive each other crazy.
Exactly. You don't subject yourself to each other. Now, was there pressure for you to get into the business? And do you worry about pressure for your children? You have two kids to feel like they need to do it. Or do you think that's a healthy thing? Because as you say, it's part of the heart of the LaFrieda clan.
It is, but there was no pressure for me to get in the business. There was pressure for me to stay out of the business. My father worked hard and sent me to preparatory schools and to a nice college. It was very expensive so that I would be the generation that escaped working in 35-degree weather all night long with butchers in a very competitive marketplace. Mm-hmm. So my father sent me off to school to be the generation that did something better. But really, in life and in business, what business is easy?
Yeah.
So I became a stockbroker for a short amount of time, and I had always worked with my dad, so I had that experience. It wasn't long after college that I was a stockbroker, and I disliked what I was doing, but I came back into the business. And my father resisted, and then my aunt, who was matriarch of the family at the time, may she rest in peace, said, no, let him come in. And then my dad was okay with it, but there was pressure against it. And as far as my children go, I'll leave it open also to them. Mm-hmm. I would love for them to do other things, Patrick, but when people say, hey, Pat, you're a celebrity butcher. Yeah, I'm a celebrity butcher. I almost cut my fingers off every night, and I have my arm elbow deep into a drainage sewer pit. Right? You know, it's nothing.
You work very hard
about it. I love what I do because it's our culture. And we make a lot of people happy. But at the same time, being a small business owner, Patrick, as you know, you are everything. You are the plumber, the electrician, sometimes the driver, you're the butcher, you're the invoice. It's not glamorous, but it is fulfilling.
It is fulfilling, and it's good for, I have an ADD personality, so it allows me to jump from thing to thing. But I've known you since... I've known you since 2004, and I can attest very, very much firsthand how hard you work. You're one of the hardest working guys I've ever met. So to jump from family to one of the things that you're most talked about, which is making delicious burger blends. In fact, when I told the guys at Roberta's that I was having you on as a guest today, they were like, tell them about the cheeseburger pizza, which is your burger, jalapeno, the red sauce, garlic, American cheese, diced speck, caramelized onions, and cacciocavallo cheese.
And, wow.
Yeah.
Those guys just never stop. They're always at it, and they always come up with something else amazing.
And then you have a great burger blend here at Roberta's. So what do you do that others had not and do not do in hamburger making?
Well, you could start first with my grandfather. I mean, my grandfather had a recipe of specific meat cuts that went into our blends. That's never changed in the three generations that were in New York City. I kind of think just listening to his advice, which was do what you do and do it better every day. Back in the day, in my grandfather's time, forget about broadliners carrying meat, fish, groceries. There were people that didn't just serve meat, but they served specific cuts of meat, like inside rounds or, let's say, navels for pastrami. And then those butchers would take those trimmings and grind them. And if you wanted to taste someone's chopped beef, it would be very different from company to company, depending on what trimmings they put into their meat. We've never done that. our meat's always been made with whole muscles, specific whole muscles. And what I did in my generation was to keep restaurants different. No restaurant on the same block wants to have the same burger meat as the guy next door.
Sure.
We've taken that skeleton of a recipe and process, grinding at very low temperatures in a slow process. It's not automated. It's still lifted and done by hand. But taking that skeleton of a recipe and then tweaked it for specific restaurants, for specific cooking surfaces, whether it be griddle or grill or a flat burger or a burger that's tall. We've custom made so many burger blends for so many different restaurants to make each of them different. And if you had the Black Label at a tavern, or you've had the Shake Shack burger, or you've had the Spotted Pig burger, or the one at the Breslin, you could just taste the difference in each one, and all that's coming out of one company. You've seen the problem with Pink Slime recently and how most major commodity hamburger grinders make their ground beef, is that they take imported trimmings from other countries that are basically tasteless. They grind the heck out of them. They mix them with these beef fillers like Pink Slime, which is actually a very safe product. It's just not something that we feel good about eating.
Mm-hmm.
And they mix it together to save the every last penny that they can, whereas our burger meat's always been a few cents a pound more, but you're really paying for something specific.
Yeah.
And Patrick, the best way to tell that is if you look at the cuts that we're using and then calculate the price it would cost per pound for the ground beef, or as we say, chopped beef, compared to if you were to compare that to prices from a commodity grinder,
sure,
and the prices are less, obviously those can't be the same ingredients.
Right, no, 100%. So, now let me ask, Pat, if a restaurant on the Upper East Side versus Tribeca versus Brooklyn calls you or Mark, your right-hand man there, and say, hey, make us a blend. Propose to us a blend. Do you propose a blend based off of the neighborhood they're in? Or what? You know, how do you determine what blend to give if you don't know them at all? Or do you usually have to have a discussion with the chef first?
Well, I always like to have a discussion with the chef or the owner, but what we'll do is we'll usually send them our original blend, which is my grandfather's, and I'll tell you, 90% of all of our customers prefer that. I mean, it's an amazing blend that incorporates chuck, clod, brisket, short rib. It really has a great flavor profile. But we'll send them that. We'll send them a short rib blend and a brisket blend, and then we'll take it from there. But I like to get input from the chef. I want to know what the chef likes to eat. What steaks do the chefs like to eat? Now, obviously, if they say New York strip steak, we're not going to start throwing $22 pound strips in. However, we'll use flat iron that has the closest flavor profile to it, and we'll achieve the flavor that they're looking for that way.
Right.
Where some chefs want sirloin, and we'll go towards flap meat, peeled knuckle, and top butt. So it all depends on what the chef prefers.
Got it. Well, what animal do you personally love to butcher most, and which one do you like the least?
Well, I'll start with what I like the least. Butchering, I'm 6'3". Butcher tables aren't adjustable. So when you're bending over, boning out poultry or quail, say, it's my least favorite.
Oh, brother.
So wild game is my least favorite. And thankfully, I have butchers in all sorts and shapes. So usually the shorter guys will have to do the poultry. My favorite meat to cut is actually veal. Uh-huh. Breaking down veal legs to take a 65-pound veal leg, to take the shank off, cut out the buco on the bandsaw, and then to take each muscle group, slice into veal cutlets and scallopini. That's my favorite because Angelo Bonsanaway was one of my father's top butchers when we were in Manhattan, and that's what he taught me to do, and he was very meticulous about it. And I always think that he's still alive. He lives in Brooklyn. He's in Queens, but I always feel he's over my shoulder yelling at me in Italian, No. You could get one more cutlet out of that. So it was always, it's my favorite thing to cut.
Well, an interesting, I think everyone knows an answer to this next question, but it would be interesting to hear it from you, a professional butcher. What makes a bad butcher? Like, where do you see bad butchering? I mean, what face does that take? And it would just be interesting to hear from your perspective.
So I think a bad butcher is very easily described as someone that doesn't care about the yield. Mm-hmm. Patrick, you would know in pork, if we have a pork loin, cutting it at the end and the chops, the butcher that cares about getting as many portions out of that center cut bone and loin, mm-hmm, on the bandsaw is a great butcher. He's able to utilize every last half inch of that loin. But a butcher that doesn't care and is cutting inconsistent cuts and, mm-hmm, is left with a triangular shape at the end that needs to be tossed and doesn't have great yield doesn't really care, mm-hmm, about the sin of wasting meat.
Yes.
And that's a bad butcher.
And it is a sin. You're absolutely right. Well, I mean, everybody's talking about butchers. I mean, you can't open a food magazine or a newspaper food section without seeing, you know, one of these new generation guys with a cleaver. You know, what is the state of butchering today? I mean, your family has been in business since 1922, serving thousands of restaurants around the city. So it'd be interesting to hear what you think the state of butchering is in 2014.
I think it's amazing, the resurgence of butchering, but it's all up to the public. Those little butcher shops that are opening around the city, I love it. I love to see that. I stop by Dixon's Farm Stand, say hello to the boys. I love the guys at Ottoman Alley. They're like family to me also, mm-hmm, on Bleecker Street. So I love stopping by to see them and see how they're doing. But at the end of it, none of them are very busy, and it scares me, mm-hmm, because those companies that have heart and soul in the game will be hurt by the general public not shopping at their local butcher and still buying their meat in the supermarket, hmm, where it's not really cut at the supermarket anymore. So their plight is in the hands of the general public. You're right. I see a lot of hip butchers opening up, some of them that don't have the heart in the game and into some glamorous profession. They'll never last, Patrick, because to wake up every morning, and it's a very repetitive business, but to wake up every morning and to pay money for the product and to portion it and put it in their butcher case gets old very quickly. Hmm. And as that meat starts to spoil and it tears the heart out of you, as it sits there in the case. So unless their heart and soul is into the business, they won't last but a few years like a short-term restaurant.
Very interesting. Well, I mean, challenges. It's funny you bring up the challenges to the butchers. I mean, your employees kind of face challenges every day. I mean, the lifeline to Heritage Foods is your driver's corps. You know, those guys that get into these big trucks and drive them through the streets of New York City, through rush hour traffic, over the, you know, Lincoln Tunnel and all that. I mean, they are really, really, really tough guys. So it'd be interesting to hear from you. Talk about the challenges facing your drivers, your delivery guys, the guys that move all the meats into all the kitchens. Hello?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can now.
Okay. I meet with those men every morning, and I listen to their plight from the day before, because as I'm finishing up my day, they're beginning theirs. And it's very difficult to take a 22 or 20-foot truck through the city and make 30 or 40 deliveries and to listen to how they've been chased by the mayor and his traffic bureau, and it counts up all the tickets every night. It's very difficult. But at the end of it, my guys are one big family, and they get the job done. They work together. They communicate. And, it, you know, sometimes we make mistakes. We'll write the wrong name on the wrong box. And it's all about finding the right meat and getting it to the right restaurant, and still all before 10 a.m. in a restaurant size. But it doesn't always happen. New York City just gets congested. Mm-hmm. So between the congestion, the amount of stops that these these men have to make, and the different cuts of meat. There are thousands of different cuts.
That they all recognize, right? And the, you have very low turnover with your drivers. I mean, Checo, Fatty, I mean, Willie, these guys have been there forever.
Most of my men are with me for 10 or 15 years. And it's only if they move out of the area are they do they ever leave. They're well compensated and well treated. I mean I was in the military, Patrick, so there's no doubt that I'm very hard on our men, but I make sure that they know that they're not working for me. At the end of all of it, they work for our restaurants.
Yes.
And if we can't help make the restaurant successful and they fail, we'll fail. So with that mindset, they've bonded with Freedom Meats as a company and a family, and then with the restaurants and their plight. A lot of our restaurants' receivers or chefs have the phone numbers of our drivers, and they can coordinate what time. Sometimes chefs don't fall out of bed till late, and they want to be there when the delivery's there. And it's not. It's only because they've worked all night long, so that they'll coordinate with our drivers as to when they'll be at the restaurant to accept delivery. So it's a very interesting game they play.
And tell us about the meat cutting processing side. Is it hard to find good cutters? Butchers?
No, we're right. We always say this. We can't find butchers. We make them.
Okay,
so interesting. We take men and women that have a passion for cutting meat and butchering, and we'll have them work alongside of our butchers. And I don't hire butchers anymore. I let my men who are working at those tables decide who they feel can make it or not. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that I've changed in the last 5 years, because ultimately they have to work alongside those men and women. And it's in our company, everyone works hard, especially the night crew, which is my shift.
Yeah,
those men and women are working diligently to get those orders done all night. And the worst thing I could do is ever put next to them someone that doesn't want to work as hard.
Yes.
So, but there's training involved, Patrick. You can't find butchers anymore. The first thing you ask them is, are you a butcher? Yes. Where have you worked? And they'll say, XYZ supermarket. Okay. Take the pork loin and cut it on the bandsaw 1 inch. Let me see how you could do. And they're pulling on the chicken leg. I'm like, wait a second. You told me you were a butcher. Well, yes. All we did was open boxes and put the packaged meat on the shelf. Okay, so you're not a butcher.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to find.
Well, Pat, you are, I'm always a little annoying at the end. You're going to now have to play for our listeners the free association speed round, where I'm going to give you a word and you give us like a sentence on it. These can be people or animals or whatever. So basically, yeah, just give us whatever comes to your mind first. You know, keep it short because we have like 8 or 9 things. So this is a really fun game. Let's start with cow. What comes to mind?
The Freedom Meat sells no cows.
You sell no cows? Oh, right, of course. God, I'm surprised I'm a meat guy and I asked that. All right, I'm embarrassed. Next, lamb.
No, wait, I think you should tell everyone real quickly why we don't sell cows.
Okay, well, you explain it.
Cows are for milking. We don't, and those animals are only processed well after 30 months of age, and all of our animals are 24 months of age or less, yielding a better, flavorful, and more healthy animal. To eat. So when we see other meat suppliers with pictures of cows and udders underneath the trucks, we always laugh, thinking, like, how could you advertise that you sell cow meat?
God, I just plummeted like 5 rungs on the ladder after that stupid question. All right, next word, lamb.
Patty the Lamb is my father's nickname.
Patty the Lamb, okay. Yeah, he's so genteel, like a little baby lamb. All right, now we'll go to a couple names. Joe Bastianich.
Joe Bastianich is one of my favorite restaurateurs of the city. Do you want me? Can I elaborate?
Sure.
Joe Bastianich is one of those men that I aspire to be like. He was one of my first customers that I got myself. I walked into Beko in the mid-90s and sat down with he and his executive chef, and he was unhappy with his supplier, and I just happened to be at the right place at the right time, and I had to happen to meet the right guy. He's a very, very loyal man, and I've been doing business with him ever since.
Very interesting. All right, Keith McNally.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant man, Keith McNally is, who's now expanding the empire to London. He's been asking me to get my export verification so I can get my product to London.
Who are you going to send to that drive, to that route, Danny?
I'm sending Ahmed and Fadi, your two guys. So
you're taking outside to a whole new level.
No, if I had to spare someone, you know, it would be Mark Pastore.
You don't need him, man. Danny Meyer.
Danny Meyer is amazing. I just came back from Aspen with Danny, where he and I were on a panel together, and I am the biggest wine illiterate person in the world. and I told Danny that in full disclosure, and he said, "Don't worry, you're going to talk about the meat and the flavor profiles. We'll drink the wine and we'll talk about the wine." I said, "Okay, Danny, then I'll come." But Danny and I have been together for decades, and obviously he and I developed the Shake Shack blend, and that's just skyrocketed that organization to you know, many, many levels above where it was. I mean, all of their successes are amazing, but I mean, I think everyone knows Danny and that organization by the Shack.
Yes, for sure. Now, last one, Mario Batali.
Oh, Mario Batali is the man that you want to do business with, and then he's also the man you want to hang out with after. Mm-hmm. Because nobody, there's no other person that could party like Mario and then be up the next morning early working as hard as he works. So I started with Mario at the same time I started with Joe Bastianich in the mid-90s, and what was funny about that is that they hadn't connected yet. So one of their common links was myself.
Wow.
So I remember Joe Bastianich, who was a very tough negotiator, having me up to Beko at a pricing meeting on West 46th Street.
Yikes.
And yelling at me as to why I'm selling meat to a small restaurant in the West Village for the same price. And I told him, "Joe, I give all my customers the cheapest price I possibly can." But I had no idea that who he was talking about was a guy he was partnering up with at the time, who was Mario Batali. At the time, the restaurant was Poe on Cornelia Street. So it was very interesting. The two of them together have been loyal customers of mine. But a very great story about Mario is when Italy was opening, and he asked me to come to Italy with him, to Torino. Mario and I, because I'm an insomniac to begin with, but Mario and I would be the last two guys of the party, and we would run out of things to drink, and Mario wanted more wine, and we were in Oscar Farinetti's castles, every night staying at a different castle of his, and Mario breaking into the wine cabinets, and I don't worry, Oscar won't mind, and then opening up a $20,000 bottle of wine, giving me half the bottle. And I'm a beer drinker, so but the next day, so if that was at 4:30 in the morning and we all had to meet at 7 a.m., Mario would be the first one out there, followed by myself, and then the guys would stumble out. So again, he is, as you know, the funnest guy to party with in the city.
Very interesting. Well, I've just been handed a question, which we got via email.
You have assistants? I love it.
Yes. Well, Joe, by the way, the live stream went down when he walked in here. He has to hang crank it to keep it going. But the Hamptons, do you distribute all the way out there to those restaurants? I mean, that's really the edge of the whole island. What's your thought on and where do you distribute to in the deliver to in the Hamptons?
Oh, we do the Hillstones out there, and we do the Crow's Nest. We do a number of restaurants out in the Hamptons. The only thing about the Hamptons is it's like the black hole when it comes to trucking. My truck gets on to Long Island at a reasonable time and then winds up coming back 24 hours later. A truck can get swept up in the traffic of the Hamptons like no tomorrow. It's one of the reasons I don't go there often, unless maybe by helicopter, and that's once in a lifetime. So we do go to the Hamptons, but it's my least favorite place for my men to travel. I send trucks all the way down to Washington, D.C., and they make it back faster than guys in the Hamptons.
That is so ridiculous. Well, good question. Thank you to the whoever wrote that. And so now, but you've been great to talk with us this long. I mean, I have a couple more questions. The TV show, how's it been received? How's it been edited? I mean, are you happy with it? It's hilarious. I've seen a few episodes, and I can't stop laughing.
Patrick, the TV show has been amazing. We filmed it. We didn't know what network it would air on. It wound up airing on Food Network. And the first season, we filmed 14 episodes, but they actually edited six of their favorites, and they put it out as a test at 11 p.m. at night on Monday night. So they ran the first six, and then they ran the first episode on the seventh week. And that was our test block. And we had 1.2 million viewers. And they were amazed that that many people watched The Meat Men. There's no other show on that network like it. So they're currently talking to us about another five seasons.
Oh, brother. Well, I know I've got to be a part of season five, damn it.
You better be.
So is this true we're seeing on Facebook? Your dad is thinking of running for mayor? With Mark as his right-hand person? Is there any truth to this?
Well, I can tell you this much. If they were to run, all our production company would have to do is show a few unedited, unfiltered, politically incorrect statements that either one of them would have made, and they wouldn't go very far.
It'd be over before it started. Oh, my God. Well, are you, I know you live outside of the city, and you're a fanatical hunter. So what animals do you hunt in the New York City tri-state area in what seasons?
Well, I just harvested a beautiful turkey in May. While my buddy Danny sat next to me, I think he fell asleep for a little bit and woke up to my gunshot. But wild turkey is delicious. It's phenomenal to eat, and you don't get more organic than that. But my favorite thing to do is to bow hunt white-tailed deer. So to bow hunt them. To bring them back to my little butcher area I have set up out in my country house, and to butcher those down and to distribute that meat to my friends is very fulfilling.
And what is the challenge, bow hunting? I mean, you sit up in a tree for a few hours, and then when it walks by, you only get one shot, right?
You only get one shot if you can get them close enough. I mean, their ability to smell humans from a half a mile away is amazing. So you have to be lucky enough that you're downwind from a deer, not upwind, and you're lucky enough to draw them in close enough to be up to 30 or 40 yards to take a shot with a bow. It's very difficult. I never hunted in my life until I started working at Lafrida Meats with my dad, and one of my delivery drivers got into a car accident, and I had to take over that truck, and I was making deliveries to Il Molino on West 3rd, which is a New York City staple. And Gino Masci, the then owner, asked me to go hunting with him one day, and he took me, and I got hooked to it, and I've been hunting ever since, and I've really learned from the best. So it's very challenging. Not only do you need the deer to come close, is that I don't just shoot any deer.
Yeah, you have to shoot the right one.
I wait for a deer that's worthy enough to shoot, being large enough with a large enough rack, or when it's doe season to be able to harvest a doe that's large enough. So I let hundreds of deer go before there's one that I actually harvest, as we like to say.
Well, I mean, we've gone 10 minutes over because this has been such a fascinating interview. I mean, I actually had to cut half the questions just to fit it into 40 minutes. We could have kept on going, but thank you so, so much for giving us time on a Sunday, and I hope next time you're on, it'll be in studio so we can grab a beer after.
And a pizza.
And a pizza, burger. Yes, a cheese burglar. If they called it the Hamburglar, they're like, if you call it the Hamburglar, McDonald's will sue you. I'm like, don't worry, they're not listening. Anyway, well, have a great day with the kids, and you know, thank you again for everything you've done. I don't know if enough people know how this network wouldn't exist if the relationship between Pat LaFrieda Meats and Heritage Foods didn't exist. So you remain a very important part of you know, my life, and it's a real honor to be able to interview you for a full show. So thanks for being on.
It's been an honor to be on with you, Patrick. Thank you.
Great. And we're sponsored again by TechServe and engineered by Joe Galarraga. Great job, Joe. And we'll be back next week. Stay tuned for our next show.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.